Tamara Lucid wrote Making the Ordinary Extraordinary, My 7 years in a Cult Los Angeles with Manly Palmer Hall. Never heard of him? Here's a quote from him from his encyclopedic and timeless work, The Secret Teachings of All Ages, written in 1928. Though the modern world may know a million secrets, the ancient world knew one, and that was greater than the million. For the million secrets breed death, disaster, sorrow, selfishness, lust, and avarice, but the one secret confers life, light, and truth. Stay tuned for Tamara with me, Robin, on Tributaries. Tamara, you do a great job describing the time in history and in California and for you when you met Manly Palmer Hall at his Philosophical Research Society in the 1980s. Can you set the scene for us now a little bit?
I think it was remarkably open. It was literally just an open door policy. People could come in and volunteer. People could come in and well, of course, go to the lectures. Every Sunday, there were hundreds of people that would show up. Some of them had been going there for 30, 40 years. And then other people, maybe they went to the Bodhi Tree like us and found the big book. They would just stop in, and there's Mr. Hall giving a lecture every Sunday. And, of course, they could also, besides volunteering, if they felt inclined like we did, they could maybe get an appointment with Mr. Hall for a counseling. The availability, the openness, it's not like that anymore for most people.
Right. You know, and the other thing, when you first started speaking right now about it was really an open door policy and things were open, that is so true from that time when things really opened up just psychically for people and energetically, and the rebelliousness against the quote-unquote society, the mainstream society in America. And in writing about his lectures, he's kind of known for, as you write that lecture in 1942, the title of that was The Secret Destiny of America. What was that about?
Well, again, I think he was just trying to say, you know, here's patriotism, which is wonderful, but let's take it to another level and how patriotism can be applied to the individual and then to improve not only self, but to improve the state of the union, if you will. So how applying principles of conduct, how you approach the world, is how you make the country feel. So it's your behavior creates a culture. And if your behavior is an elevated behavior, elevated as in more refined, you will have a better culture. And America will have a better destiny. It's just cause and effect. Really. So if you're good, your family becomes good, your neighborhood becomes good, your world becomes good.
And what is it about his book, The Secret Teachings of All Ages, that keeps it in print today? And maybe you can share a little bit about it.
I think it's a marvelous encyclopedia. Anything occult, anything mystical, all those things are so fascinating anyway to a seeker. And it's just all in one giant book with pictures and everything else. It opens up worlds. It opens up it expands your mind, literally, because you see all these different people, all these different experiences, and all these different interpretations of the mystical experience. And that's what people are trying to understand usually when they discover the big book. They've had some form of mystical experience, or they're feeling a longing for something more than their basic religious outlook. Maybe, you know, they grew up in a conservative Christian or a conservative whatever religion, and they're thinking, this is not answering my questions, really. And so they can go to the big book, and they see, well, somebody in 1400 experienced this. I experienced that. So it gives people a base point to step off from to start understanding mysticism, religious experience, the cultivation of higher consciousness.
So, Tamra, here you are many years later from your daily time spent with Manly, and it was a time that seems to have bred a deeper intuitive and psychic awareness for you and everyone that seemed to be able to hang around this man. Can you report on what you remember noticing or feeling in that time, and how has that changed, or has it changed in reflecting back?
Well, I think there are seekers. There are people who have experiences, and they were naturally inclined to go to Mr. Hall because of the big book and because of the availability and his healthy approach to life. At the same time, that was the beginning. You know, this is when Shirley MacLaine wrote Out on a Limb, so everybody knew about the Bodhi tree, all of a sudden blew up, kind of. So there were a lot of people saying, I want some of that. I want to evolve my abilities as a human being, which, you know, evolving your psychic abilities or evolving your sensitivity to the spiritual was, I'd say it was highlighted. It was activated more. Mm-hmm. I think it's still going on, but there's more availability now, but there's also a lot more shenanigans going on, because that's the world of the internet. You know, you can find incredible stuff there, but you can find such incredible bull.
Right, yes.
But that was always there. That's the problem with spirituality, especially when spirituality becomes monetized. So you still got to use some common sense. If what you're getting involved with is helping you, do you feel better? Do you function better? Then that's good. You should use it. If it doesn't, if you're getting weird, if, you know, you're running down a rabbit hole of conspiracies or weird theories that make you nervous, probably should take another route, you know.
And absolutely.
It's bringing common sense to your spiritual experience.
Right. And so what do you think, or who do you think influenced him the most? Did he have the most influencer, or did he really have this great ability to cull from everything and then really divine it into his own understanding, which was easily translatable, of course, to other folks?
He always talked about his grandmother, and his grandmother got him into Blavatsky and a lot of the spiritual studies that he studied his whole life. Yeah, he always managed to comb through everything intellectually and bring it down, back down to the basic. This applies to the human condition and creating a better life for self and others. So he had a beautiful ability to do that and to speak about it.
Which, of course, speaks to his understanding, right? When you know something,
yes,
well,
definitely,
you can easily translate it and share it. So
to be able to synthesize all that knowledge and then give it practical meaning in daily life was just a gift. That's absolute gift.
Yes, because we need those people through the different time epochs, because the language shifts. No matter how subtle, it does shift. So,
oh, yeah, and trying to speak in that language. I mean, the difficulty that you see most often is people have a spiritual experience, they have a psychic experience. Now try and explain that to somebody. You know, it's like, well, I saw my long-dead grandma walk in the room, and she told me do this and that and stop eating those, and I don't know what the hell I just experienced. Well, yeah, that's your long-dead grandma showing up and talking about your diet and what job you should have is a little bit alarming for most people. We don't deal in that on the day-to-day life.
that element is always there, but you do need a universal translator right there. And most people don't have that. And that's where a lot of the problem with the basic religions comes from, because they do not address those kind of events. And these events are actual events that happen to people all the time. And it's, well, you know, is it Jungian? Is it just my superego, my higher self speaking to me? Is this the devil conjuring in front of me and scaring me? And do I have an entity attached to me? I shouldn't have read those tarot cards or something like that. You know, that's why a lot of emphasis was on a wholesome relationship. Instead of reacting in the extreme, even though you've had an extreme event, observe the event with a certain detachment. If it's simply your psyche giving you a message, it comes in the form of your grandmother, a trusted being that you've known, and it is trying to tell you something, that you need to stop eating that food, you need to get a different job. It's just a way of the mind projecting outward so that you get the message. I think one of the things he was really trying to express is, even if you have an experience like that, it is extraordinary. But what you have to do is bring it down to a basic, what is my mind? Basically, take responsibility. I'm manifesting this. So why did I manifest this? Now, did I need something that exciting to believe in? Or should I just take the dietary and job advice and move on? Or should I ignore it because I'm getting too wiggy about stuff? And have a good basic knowledge of self so that you can interpret that.
Yes, and of course the title of your book is Making the Ordinary Extraordinary. And you were just talking about making the extraordinary ordinary.
Ordinary.
Yes. This book does really epitomize that interplay between what's ordinary and what's extraordinary about life and lives.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
what do you feel is extraordinary in your life today?
Oh, going through COVID. This is an extraordinary time, indeed. What do I think is extraordinary? A lot of stuff, but of course it's little things, you know. What's extraordinary? Hummingbirds. That's extraordinary.
Definitely.
As Mr. Hall said, allow the world to be your teacher. Allow things to unfold. Didn't think I was going to write that book. Got written. Didn't think it was going to get published. Got published. Didn't think I'd be talking on the phone with you, but I am. It's kind of extraordinary. And also just taking this little bit of my life and people are interested in it. And that's kind of extraordinary for me.
Yes, well, it certainly speaks into the world community and what we all experience. And using the words esoteric or occult, I guess depending where you're at in your life, those words can have either negative or positive connotations.
Mm-hmm.
Can you speak to what they are to you, and then we'll go maybe into what you feel like you practiced today from those days and what you learned from Manly Hall, or perhaps what you've left behind?
Hmm. Well, I think there are practitioners. People who want to deeply study and deeply understand, there's the intellectual, and there's the spiritual, there's the emotional, there's the physical.
Does the occult speak to one more than esoteric would speak to one? How do you see those terms?
Esoteric is a more intellectual to me. Occult, well, that's more fancy. It's more exciting. It's sort of the entertainment portion of the spiritual. People that are into a more self-flattering kind of aspect, they want the bells and the whistles. They want, you know, the Catholic Church. I mean, they've got the churches, and they've got all the rituals, and they've got all, you've got the wine, and you've got the wafers. It's a very, very eventful religious practice. Some people like ritual. They feel that that is where they connect. Esoteric, I think, is more, I want the knowledge. I want to read everything. I want to know everything about this subject. So that's more intellectual pursuit. Spiritual, I think spiritual is great because it's sort of the catch-all. You've got your own personal stuff. You've got an infinite world out there with the spiritual. And your job is to find what you like. I like that.
Hmm. So do you have any particular rituals or alchemical processes that you do in your life today?
Well, all of it is, really. I mean, it's sort of like after enough study and enough experience, it's sort of like you, or at least I, you tend to blend it all. I once had someone say, it works like this in spirit. If something works, we keep it. If it doesn't work, we throw it out and we move on. And I'm kind of like that. If working chakras works, I'm going to work chakras as long as it works. And it shifts. It always shifts because our psyche and our capacity changes over time. Hopefully, we get more sensitive. We get more aware. We don't need any bells, whistles, or even a secret handshake. We can simply go through life, allow the world to be our teacher, and we will learn as we progress through life. And I try to practice that. It's simply allowing the world to guide me where I need to go and be there, what would you call it, in a spiritual fashion.
In the moment.
Yes, in the moment. Thank you.
Yeah, and I think that's where we, as a single person or as a culture or as a country, get stuck because that something will become a rule. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Something will get rigid. When you write about Manley's work, you say he was distilling the beauty and wisdom he found in rare manuscripts and books into a philosophy of life that was gentle, joyful, aesthetic as an experience. And he had such a huge library, didn't he, of books? And I'm wondering, was there one or two books that you were particularly attracted to when you were free to just luxuriate in that huge library?
No, it's just, every single one of them was dazzling. It was so overwhelming to stand in that library. The hum that the thing had from all those books, and they were all just, oh my God, it was gorgeous. and it wasn't even the good stuff. The good stuff was in the vault. Amazing, amazing. It was just, if you like books, you're going to love this place. That's what it was really like. And you could take out any book you wanted, just peruse the thing for hours. We were at the point, you know, working there, that he was like, go ahead, take it home, knock yourselves out, kids. Bring the book back after you're done. And the kind of freedom we were afforded there was just amazing. And every single one of those books was a fascinating tour of consciousness. It was fun.
Can you share the title of one book that most of us might not know about, but one that just really stuck with you?
Oh, let's see. Well, I really love the rulership book. It's by Bills, Rex E. Bills. And it's marvelous because all it does is delineate the planets and the signs. It's just, what is it? A dictionary of astrological correspondences. I have used that book for years, practically daily. Just, I like corresponding things, putting like with like. So it's just been a joy to have. That's one, I mean, my house is the most disorganized library you would ever see in your life. Always stacks of books everywhere. And I even once had a astrological reading, and it said, this person tends to be a bit bookish. And, you know, this is while being a singer. And I was like, they just called me bookish. But then every time I talk about books, I get, ah. And you can tell there's a bit of a bookishness here. There's a love of reading and learning. So really anything that strikes my fancy is I just go with it. I'll be reading a book about ancient Egyptian perfumes, and then, like I said, the rulership book, maybe the spirits book by Kardak, anything like that. Then the joy of cooking. There we go. So I follow my interest.
So having had this experience years ago, and you just mentioned you thought you'd never be writing, what do you think someone would gain? Or do you ever even think about that from reading this book? And perhaps, what did you gain by writing it?
Well, writing it was heartbreaking. The reason I wrote it was because of our friend Art Johnson. And he was transitioning. He was calling us up on the phone saying, don't make the same mistake I made, kids. Particularly you, Tamara, because you had a relationship with that old man. And it's important that people know that and what transpired there. And when somebody tells you something like that at that time, it's a serious thing to say. And that was a friend saying, you should do this. Do this for me, okay? It's good for you. It's good for me. You should do this. So that was part of it. Now, part of it also was that the way things panned out, I had never processed the whole experience. There's another thing. I had to process what had actually happened and how I really felt about it.
It kind of happened. Your relationship to the Halls happened, surprisingly, and then just as surprisingly, you were dismissed.
Then I get to read what I wrote and read it back to myself and go, oh, boy, that look how that worked out. He was doing what he thought was the right thing. He was saying, kids, you got to get out of here. We're all dying. We're all really old. You're really young. You got to go. It's not right that you're here. And I don't want you to see what's going to happen next.
And it's so difficult, isn't it, to take those times, to not take those times personally, right? It takes a lot of growth to move beyond that.
Yeah. So I had to, you know, I had to face all the anger I felt about not being able to protect him. That was my job. Still felt like I failed him. That's just the way it happened, and I had to accept it. Damn you, Arthur. Also, the synchronicity of the time was that I had actually been working with Ronnie, writing screenplays for Waris Hussein. And Mr. Hussein is a super great storyteller. And at the same time, then COVID hit. And it was like, well, obviously, the world's your teacher. Might as well write it now because we got nothing to do. It's fresh in my memory. The work, the storytelling skill. I should do this now and be done with it. That's how it came about.
A curious thing. Before I saw your book, I'd never heard of Manly P. Hall. And my circle's pretty wide in this arena.
Yeah.
And in Manly's time around L.A., he was a peer of Krishnamurti, for instance. And everyone who's peripherally in this world has heard of him, but not Manly P. Hall. And yet I love the thought of people spilling out of the room during his lectures every single week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the things I wanted people to know is Mr. Hall. The Mr. Hall is this great guy, wonderful man. And I'd seen so many people online going, oh, he was this and he was that. And it's like, the thing that freaked me out was he had lectured to so many people and nobody wrote about him. It's like, really? nobody who was there wrote about it. And it was such a foundation for so many people.
Yes.
And I was like, well, somebody should write about him. I wanted it to, basically what I wanted to do is say, all right, a lot of people have read the books. A lot of people listen to the lectures online. You can still see him and you can still hear his beautiful voice. And, okay, this is my experience with the man. This is what I saw there, and this is my experience there. I really just wanted people to get to know the man that I got to know and to see what he was like and what the people were like there, too, because the people there were really great people, extraordinary people, each individually. The whole Manly Hall experience, I just thought that, all right, well, Arthur told me to do this. Ronnie encouraged me to. I had a lot of women writers, a lot of academics going, go ahead and do this. This is great. Go on. I went, all right. Well, this is where the world is pushing me. So let's do this. By the way, those ladies did a lot of work editing me and you know, going, do this correctly. And how did you feel about that, Tamara? I don't want to talk about how I feel. No, you got to talk about how you feel. You're writing the book. Oh, okay. Rather Capricorn feelings. Oh, those are, now we're getting into choppy water.
Are they important?
They're important? What?
You write about the serendipity that occurred on a regular basis around Manly Hall. And I appreciated reading that as you wrote, he said there seems to be no need to limit or restrict the normal actions of other humans. And that's such a great philosophy to keep in the moment and allow people their presence.
Exactly. It's like you can help guide. You can say, oh, that sounds very familiar. That sounds like this experience. You may want to look into that. It's not telling people this is the way it is. I happen to know it. But that's a dominator attitude, to allow people to be themselves, to naturally unfold their consciousness, their psyches. That's what you want to be there for. That's the beautiful thing. That's the good work.
Yes.
The dominator species thing, that's not a religious conversion. That's just, now you're the boss.
Right, that's a takeover.
A hostile takeover.
Right. Well, I appreciate knowing now about Manly Palmer Hall and his work, and I think the road into our knowing certainly continues, doesn't it?
Yeah. Right. Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah. There's always more hope in the world when you find out about people like Manly Palmer Hall, isn't there?
Yeah, there really is.
Tamara Lucid, thank you. For anything Tributaries related, it's tributariesradio.wordpress.com. Our podcasts are in the usual spots, and if you can't find us, let us know. I'm Robin Clare. Thanks for staying tuned.